Americans, data or content.
For all of these stories and more, please check out usaradio.com. This is USA Radio News.
Hey, I'm Brant. Maybe you've heard us talking about MediShare on the radio or heard people saying how they're really thankful for MediShare, and you're like, okay, what exactly are you talking about? Hey, it's a great question. So here's what it is. MediShare is a nationwide community of Christians who share each other's medical costs. Here's why it's grown so much. MediShare costs about half what other healthcare programs cost. It's flexible, too, so you can pick a plan that fits your monthly budget, and you get to choose your own doctor from one of America's largest networks. Something else people really appreciate? You don't have to pay for procedures or prescriptions that go against your beliefs. And you know what the best part is? It works. And it's worked for more than 20 years. People who've experienced catastrophic health bills get their needs met. People pray for each other. MediShare is a nonprofit, faith-based ministry, and it could be a huge blessing to you. Here's how you can find out more. Call 833-39-BIBLE, now available in Montana. That's 833-39-BIBLE, 833-39-BIBLE.
House Speaker Paul Ryan held his first weekly press conference of the new year. He was asked, of course, about DACA and the continuing resolution.
Yeah, look, I think we'll have that. I think we will be able to put together a DACA compromise that has a majority support from our party. You have to remember, and I know I sound like a broken record, A, we want to fix DACA. We do want to fix DACA.
The Pentagon has responded to the deployment of three B-2 stealth bombers to Guam. USA Radio Network's John Clemens reports.
In what may be a message being sent to North Korea, three nuclear-capable B-2 stealth bombers, along with 200 personnel, have been sent to the U.S. territory of Guam. Lieutenant General Kenneth McKenzie explained the deployment.
The bomber deployment is part of an ongoing planned deployment that affects not only the Korean Peninsula, but also a broader alliance structure in the Pacific.
Pacific Air Forces described this deployment as in support of the U.S. Pacific Command's Bomber Assurance and Deterrence Mission. I'm John Clemens.
This is USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Wayne Allyn Root. I'm a father of four, and I worry every day about this dangerous world. There are so many things that could go wrong. Economic collapse, stock market crash, terrorist attack, war with North Korea. There's a lot to worry about when it comes to protecting your income, assets, and your family's future. Thankfully, my good friends at Tangible Investments are your safe haven from the storm. Call now, and Tangible Investments will send you, absolutely free, a 1 ounce American Silver Eagle, along with your guide for investing in precious metals. To receive your free American Silver Eagle, call toll-free 800-780-9000. That's 800-780-9000.
And now with a look at some of the stories going on around the world making news, here's USA Radio Network's Luke Vargas.
European Union leaders are urging President Trump to stick with the 2015 Iran deal as he decides whether to certify Iran's continued compliance. British Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson said Thursday Iran is complying with the deal and that those critical of the agreement offer better alternatives.
I think it's incumbent on those who oppose the JCPOA really to come up with that better solution because we haven't seen it so far.
German Foreign Minister Sigmar Gabriel, meanwhile, argued that ripping up the Iran deal would send the wrong message to North Korea.
It would send a very dangerous signal to the rest of the world, the only agreement which prevents us from the proliferation of nuclear weapons would be negatively affected.
Trump has until Friday to decide whether to reimpose sanctions on Iran that were lifted following the 2015 nuclear agreement. And citing high levels of violent crime and gang activity, the State Department is urging Americans to avoid all travel to five Mexican states. U.S. government employees are further banned from certain travel within those regions, as well as from visiting strip clubs and casinos. The Level 4 Do Not Travel warnings for Colima, Guerrero, Michoacan, Sinaloa, and Tamaulipas states places those areas on a similar footing as war-torn countries like Yemen, Syria, Iraq, and Libya. Luke Vargas, the United Nations.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
We get that story from USA Radio's Jason Wirt.
A Central Florida woman in custody after authorities say she left her young daughter in a hot, stuffy car while she visited an inmate. The Orange County Sheriff's Office says Rachel Etienne left her two-year-old locked inside the car when temperatures reached 110 degrees. A staff member patrolling the parking lot saw the child and freed her. Deputies say the little girl was sweating but otherwise uninjured. A neighbor tells Fox 35 Orlando Etienne had been warned previously by neighbors about leaving the child in a hot car.
ESPN is issuing a statement about the two-week suspension handed to host Jemele Hill for making political statements on social media. The network saying in a statement that they have reminded all employees of how individual tweets may reflect negatively on ESPN and that such actions would have consequences, hence their decision with Hill. The move comes after she called for a boycott of advertisers aligned with the Dallas Cowboys after the team's owner, Jerry Jones, said players would be benched for not standing for the national anthem. She was under fire already last month when she called President Trump a white supremacist. And the Chicago Cubs are investigating how one of their 2016 World Series rings ended up on the auction block. Leyland's.com listing what it says is a 10-carat gold ring that was issued to a scout for the team. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Every Monday morning at 10 a.m. on 100 in Chamber Radio for Chamber in Action with Chamber President Chris Phelan and Good Morning host Big C, where we'll keep you informed on all the issues, all the initiatives of the 100 County Chamber of Commerce and our business community here in 100 County. You're listening to WHCR-DB, 100inChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the 100 County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
It is 9:05. It's time for 100 Chamber Radio weather. Flemington, right now it's 70 degrees, partly cloudy skies, and we have no rain in the forecast, although we got much of it last night. A mix of clouds and sun today. It's October 10th, a high of 81. Sounds just like October weather. Winds light and variable. A few passing clouds tonight, and otherwise generally clear, and a low of 58. Winds light and variable. For tomorrow, partly cloudy skies during the morning hours will give way to occasional showers in the afternoon, a high of 74, chance of rain 40%. Cloudy and slight chance of a rain shower in 64 on Thursday. Partly cloudy skies in the morning hours on Friday with a high of 66. Saturday, partly cloudy 76. And Sunday the 15th, a mild 80. Temperatures in our area: 70 in Raritan, 69 in Ringo, 68 in Kingwood, 65 in Frenchtown, 66 over in Easton, 72 in White House Station. Good morning, Hunterdon. That is Hunterdon Chamber Radio weather.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on 100 in Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@100-chamber.org.
Welcome back to Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com, WHCRDB. This is the Good Morning Hunterdon Show. I am Big C, and I have my guests here today. We're talking about a little bit earlier this morning. We've heard so much about the turkey trot. Comes around every November. It's been around. It's an institution in Flemington. But you may not know how the turkey trot fits in with our community and why it exists. So we're going to bring in some folks. They're going to help us understand all that. And they are representing an organization known as CEA. And we're going to learn all about that, too. And when they're done, I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised about the effort and the work that they do here. So hang on. We are going to bring our folks in. And Andy, you said you're going to kick it off. So good morning, Andy. How are you today?
Good. Thank you, Chris.
So, Andy, you are part of the board, and we are classmates of Leadership Hunterdon, and
correct.
This is one of the reasons that I think you got involved with CEA at one point, right?
Right. My first meeting or, you know, with CEA was years ago. I've been very active in the Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, been chairman of the Ambassadors Committee for like 10 years, and probably 7-8 years ago on the committee was a woman named Rose Holden, mm-hmm. who was at that time was the director of development for CEA. Okay. So she told me, you know, we're just chatting, and she told me about CEA, and it sounded interesting. And then, unfortunately, she left the organization. Mm-hmm. But Chris Phelan of the chamber had a going away party, or invited some people from the chamber, including myself, to her going away party.
Right.
And I came to CEA. This is again like 7-8 years ago, and I was very impressed with what they do. And I think a lot of it is I have a handicapped autistic niece. She lives in Virginia. She doesn't live in the area.
Right.
But I saw the people that they serve there, and it reminded me of her, and I was very touched by it. And CAA was becoming more and more to the forefront of my mind, although I didn't really know anything in depth.
Right.
And then we were in Leadership Hunterdon together,
yep.
class of 2014.
Yep.
And Chris Phelan and Suzanne Legay made it clear that one of the big things was, well, when you were done, oh, it's not just done. You should get involved in the community.
Sure, sure.
And I had always thought during that year that I may join the CEA board.
Yep.
And one of the sessions at Leadership Hunterdon was talking, learning county government. And so I met John King. I was talking about county planning. Now, John King is a county freeholder, but he is also a board member of CEA, and at the time, he was president of CEA board. I knew that because I checked out the website without really knowing
reconnaissance.
Anyone.
You did some reconnaissance.
Yes,
there.
I did some stalking. So anyway, we talked, and then I remember it was right after tax season. I'm a CPA at Bedard Quick & Company on Broad Street here in Flemington. And I met Mike Skocic at an Investors Bank networking event. Investors is very involved in both the chamber and CEA.
Right.
And so we had a nice chat. And then I decided, let's go down to CEA and take the plunge and join the board.
Neat.
So I joined the board in June of 2014.
Yeah.
And I've talked to people at Leadership Hunterdon and elsewhere. I've seen them at the Turkey Trot, or they know about the Turkey Trot, or they're running in it, and they think it's fun and it's great, but they have no idea who's sponsoring it, or maybe they've heard of CEA, but they don't know what CEA is involved.
Right.
And so I thought it was a good idea to have Michael and Gina here to get it more in depth, and I can certainly add some more of my perspective.
Well, it's most appreciated, and I will be one to raise my hand. I've learned and heard about the Turkey Trot for years, and I report on it when it comes through around the time of November. I also know of CEA, but I didn't, and I do know that they combined. But I got to admit, Michael, that the Turkey Trot somehow is publicly overshadowing CEA a little bit. So you're the CEO of CEA. I love that. And you've been there since 2004 as the CEO, you said?
That is correct, yes.
So one of the things I liked what Andy had mentioned was that whenever you become a board member, you got to have something in your inner being, in your inner core that you identify with that makes you possess the passion to do that type of work. What is it for you?
It's the success of finding work for people with disabilities more than anything else.
Right.
I must confess that when I first joined CEA in 93, I came in to run a training program, which at the time was retail sales, and specifically in the toy business, which was my background at that time. And as I was working with the people that came to us for training and for placement and evaluation services, I was also working with students in our school at the time. And I saw a lot of people succeed very well in retail and just in general with their work skills. that we were helping them develop or understand or find. And it became sort of organically growing within me to find that I was really becoming passionate about the whole concept of what we did and the variety of work that we actually wound up doing as a training manager within the employment services programs. I saw one end. A few years after that, I became the director of sales and became the salesperson for our packaging business, and saw a whole new, different side, as it were, of that whole business, where people were actually working. And you know, the average person on the street might expect that a person with a very obvious disability, if you will, wouldn't be able to do certain jobs or would be have to be treated differently. And that's really not the case in many cases. Yeah. But with a slight accommodation, things work out really well.
Yeah, when I was growing up, and I don't think I'm any older or younger than anybody else in the room here, but I remember in high school and middle school, those students that were not of the standard were put in a little room somewhere, and we saw them come in and leave. That was it. And that was about as good as it got. Then when I was a teacher back in another life, mainstreaming came along. And that was the idea and the philosophy that we should start to provide those folks that have some disabilities or handicaps or challenges to give them as much of a whatever normal is, which is a whole other philosophical discussion, give them as much of an experience that everybody else gets as possible, and then fill in the gaps. You guys are taking it to the nth degree now. There is actual hands-on work that goes on to provide the job skills knowledge so that so that your students are effective and independent for the most part.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we just in July of 2016, we created a new school called the CEA School. It is co-located with our friends at South Hunterdon Regional School District inside their high and middle school.
Wow.
And we've got a student count that is the highest it's been for 3 years now. And it looks like we're expanding that program. And it's essentially a unique school program for high school and now middle school kids that not only does the academic end of things and the transition to life skills and work post-graduation,
right.
But it also has a mandate to do inclusion classes, starting with some of the electives, and we're now starting some of our students with the cooperation and assistance of South Hunterdon's staff in regular mainstream academic classes.
Nice. Now, which came first in your opinion? You've been doing this now for 13 years as a director. Was there an outside influence that was helping, that was allowing you guys to get more flexibility? Or have you been knocking down doors and now everybody else is catching up?
I think a bit of both. There was the outside influence was the changing values and perspective of society in general with a greater focus on inclusion and acceptance.
Yeah.
And I think that comes with time, of course, too, as we as a nation and as a people evolve, if you will,
yeah,
on how we look at people that are either different or who have some challenges that with technology or with understanding or with the correct teaching methods can help them achieve far greater than by segregating them in a closed environment. And this seems to be true not only for students but also for the adult population for whom we work, where in the last several years, not only through societal changes but also through successes,
yeah,
we are finding that community employment has far greater long-lasting effects than sheltered employment in many cases. It's not for everybody, but it does seem to be a very positive step in the for most people who have a special need or a need in accommodation, right, to find a way to work competitively in an open environment.
Well, there's a business strategy and a problem here that is being solved. Referring to my past, those students were given government subsidies and pushed off into pasture somewhere. Now we're actually, I hope, we're taking some government money, and we're going to bring Gina in a little bit to kind of give us the whole focus of it. But the government money to help make those students that were put off somewhere in a closet to be more productive, and we hopefully benefit from that. Is that Do you see that ROI?
That is exactly how it's going. Again, with the CEA school at South Hunterdon, it's only been a year and a half now.
Right.
But we've had three students graduate last June.
Neat.
And two of them have found employment. Mm-hmm. One, the family decided to hold off a little while before having the young men find a job. Right. But a two-thirds success rate is pretty darn good. It's also a very small population study. Yeah. But at the same time, We're seeing from our government friends, mostly through the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation, which is part of the Department of Labor. Mm-hmm. We ran a study for them, a pilot program, if you will, for community evaluations for adults.
Right.
And we just became approved for a brand new program called PRETS, which stands for Pre-Employment Transition Services, which is helping young adults who are still in school find or develop the skills to find a job, and if they have a job, to help maintain it during their school hours, so obviously an evening or a Saturday or weekend job,
right.
With one-on-one coaching, which is
neat.
Designed to create the conditions that will allow them to work more regularly, more continuously following school.
Neat.
And we'll see. It looks very promising.
Yes, it does. So we're talking with the folks from CEA. I got one more person I'm going to bring in, but Gina, I'm going to give you one or two more minutes before I bring you in. I'm going to take a quick break. And we'll be right back with more about Turkey Trot and CEA on HuntingChamberRadio.com.
This is Chamber President Chris Phelan inviting you to the 29th Annual Business and Home Expo with our restaurant showcase. This wonderful event will happen on Thursday, November 9th at our new location, Next Level Arena on Case Boulevard in Flemington from 2 to 7 p.m. If you're a business or organization and would like to participate, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or visit our website at huntingchamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntingChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
All right, well, we're back. You're listening to WHCR-DB. Good morning, Hunterdon, on HuntingChamber.com. We're talking to folks from CEA, and I got Gina with me, who's the resource development of CEA. And Gina, how long have you been a part of the organization?
I actually just joined CEA this year, 2017.
All right, so no pressure.
No.
Turkey Trot's been going on for how long, Mike?
25th year.
Yeah.
Okay, so 25 years and nothing, you know.
Just jumping right in.
Just jump right in. I mean, it's an established thing. So, what was your background that led you to be part of CEA and be a resource development?
Yeah, I have
director.
A background in nonprofits.
Okay.
Worked for other local nonprofits. Previously, I worked for Fisherman's Mark in Lambertville.
Okay. Yeah.
Saw an opportunity here at CEA and. And I grabbed it.
Sweet.
We grabbed her.
And she grabbed it. Most people who get involved in nonprofits, it's a love, right? I mean, you're not doing this to get rich.
No, that's you're absolutely.
I mean,
I'm
not saying anything that we don't realize. But what gravitates you towards nonprofit resource development as opposed to corporate? Or for profit?
I don't know. It might be in your DNA. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But it's just generally, you know, that call, that drive to feel like you're, you know, doing your civic duties and able to make a career of it and
right.
Maybe you have a calling to be, you know, be a force within your community. Maybe that's what it is.
Sure. You worked at, you said, Fisherman's Mark. How did you learn about this gig and why was it so appealing to you?
You know, I think that when you have your hand, you know, in the nonprofit world, you're very much aware of other nonprofit organizations, especially in Hunterdon County.
Right.
You know, I was...
We're a thriving metropolis here, so...
Yeah. So I think, you know, CEA is definitely a very sustainable nonprofit, been in operation since 1970. It's always appealing when looking to join a nonprofit, but... I really feel that helping individuals with varying disabilities, you know, find employment, find that meaningful part to their lives that all of us, you know, it's like we have family, but then, you know, a lot of us have work family too. It's such an important
right.
part of our lives. That was very appealing to me as well to be part of that success story.
Neat. So, Michael, we were talking off air. It's so obvious to me that when you have folks that are that need so much direction and specific skills to be worked on, that your faculty to student ratio is relatively high. It's 1-to-1 almost because you're not just teaching a math class. You're teaching the specific skills that student needs to achieve. And then you're doing this as a nonprofit. Now I know, you know, 100 Central is a quote unquote nonprofit too. But when you have that many faculty working to that many students, it's a challenge. But I do know that you're getting some funds from the sending school district. In fact, probably more than the standard that an average student in a school would get. But there's still more costs beyond that, right? So that's where the correlation of I'm getting some funds from the school district, but I still need more help from the outside community. So you can give some clarity to that?
Yeah, as a private school, if you will, even though we're co-located within a public school,
right.
The Department of Education, you know, rules our activities and make sure that we follow the basic standards and above the basic standards for
right.
all of our students. Each student does receive an individualized education academically, and then once they're getting ready for work, they get certainly individualized, in fact personalized to some degree, transition training. Most of that is under the direction of a qualified teacher, of course, with the social worker and the other supports that would be typical for a school, particularly
right.
working with a more at-risk population. Many of our students, because of their backgrounds and potentially because of the issues they face every day, have a one-on-one aid that is with them, not to help them, but to be as a resource should they require some help over and above what is available in the classroom or in the community transition setting.
Sure.
That person is paid for, as they would be in a public school, where many students do, as you mentioned earlier, are mainstreamed, but would have a one-on-one aid. That aid, in my opinion, is underpaid because of the work they do and, sure. And the depth of understanding and ingenuity, in fact, sometimes. Their job is to essentially assist the young adult, or the student, become a young adult to act and be more and more independent and to basically fade away. And we have had aides that, at some point, are no longer necessary for the success of the student. So that does drive up the cost. It also drives up the ability for the student to become a more societal functioning young adult once they finish school.
Right, right. So, how many students are in the population of CEA at this point?
As of yesterday, 14. As of the end of the month, 15.
All right.
And that is fairly low by public school standards.
Sure.
It's fairly high. In fact, we are going to be maxed out, I believe, at 16, which we're anticipating sometime in November.
Uh-huh.
And then we're likely to go to a waiting list. And just as a teaser for the audience, as it were, I am about this far away, and for those of you who don't see me, it's about a half an inch away from being able to announce that we're opening a second school up in Morris County, so we're not competing with ourselves for students, to provide the same form of integrated education and transition
wow.
service.
That's awesome.
And again, that'll be the second unique school in the state, so we're a
right.
unique style or concept now.
Now, the... that implies that there's some students that are coming from a great distance to your school right now. Is that correct?
That is correct, and not in the way that you might be thinking or implying. One of the attractions for students in our school is, aside from the integrated, fully, not customized, but individualized education opportunities, students are coming from all over the state because one of the... places that has found benefit for their students are group homes for students that are temporarily out of their district for a variety of reasons,
mm-hmm.
Specific to the age demographic that would be appropriate for high school.
Right.
And there's one of these group homes here in Hunterdon County that has found significant success with their students in our facility.
Right.
So we are, oddly enough, the preferred out-of-district placement site for Lower Cape May Township.
Oh,
amongst other places.
Wow.
So, this is one of the reasons why we have a fairly high number of students,
uh-huh.
A little over 20 in the last year, but a low-ish in relation population
yeah.
base on average, because the students rotate sometimes in and out as they become able to transition back to a more stable or back home,
right.
and back to their home district life.
Now, is there a niche that represents the student that comes to your school? Is there a certain criteria that makes sense that you can do your job and there's other ones that you just have to rule out?
Each student that is suggested to us by their child study team from their school district or by the school district personnel, either school psychologist, what have you, would have an IEP meeting. We'll take a look at the individualized education plan for the student. The students, their family members, the sending district or potential sending district would meet with our staff, and they would visit the school.
Mm-hmm.
The student would visit the school in all likelihood too, and we'd see where the fit is.
Right.
There is no specific criterion that says, no, this particular student can't attend.
Right.
But at the same time, some students are more appropriate to work and receive instructions with their peer groups differ, I guess
sure,
is what I'm saying.
Sure.
And
I
with
guess
a small body, we don't have an awful lot of flexibility as far as widening that.
Right. The gist of my question is to figure out, it sounds like there's more of a need than there is ability to achieve. It sounds like there could be more students out there. And you're full, almost full here, and now you're looking at another opportunity up in Morris County. How much more potential is there out there that we're not meeting?
I guess it depends on the perspective. There are, I believe, in New Jersey, 75,000 kids that fall under the special education category that could be candidates for schools such as CEAs. Most of those kids, of course, are mainstreamed in their home district.
Right.
And different districts have different needs and can provide different services. Mm-hmm. One of the things that might be restrictive in some cases is the requirement by Department of Education for each school district to provide a transition plan for each student that is not on a mainstreamed track to college or to a specific type of work.
Right.
And here we're not talking about apprenticeships or anything. But these programs are mandated for a couple of decades now to exist. Some school districts don't have the ability to provide an appropriate transition plan for each type of student that may be in their district. So that's why, in many cases, a private school is a good option, because, again, it provides a better, more likely path for future success for the student.
Sure. It just amazing to me that if you have 75,000 potential candidates out there, I've gotten a sense from my existence now for years that everybody's got what I consider a flaw, and I'm not saying that in any degrading manner. Everybody's got their skills that are some better than others, and then other people's got some detriments, and every person's just got to realize that. Public school has sanitized that. We throw people into a classroom and we teach to the norm, and then the kids that have better skills have to either lower their standards to just absorb what's going on in the classroom, or somehow the teacher's got to add more information to make them successful and keep them motivated. Kids that are below the norm, they got to swim or grab a life preserver. But now we have this whole special ed IEP world where we're working on so much more personal work to make a student, to help a student, and giving them a lot more information to achieve and grow. And it sounds like that's all built into the DNA of CEA. I threw another acronym in there. I'm so cool. I don't think people realize how much more personnel have to be on your staff just to have those 14 or 15 students achieve. Can you give us a list of what other folks are doing in your building to get those students from point A to point B?
About 50% of the staff that work with our students, as I mentioned earlier, are one-on-one aides.
Right.
That help the student become more and more independent, if you will, as they get older.
Right.
We have obviously several teachers that are specific to the academic end of life. We also have a transition teacher that is a fully licensed teacher that is also very specifically focused on developing appropriate working habits in community settings. And the teachers have an assistant, of course, as would be normal in a school. Mm-hmm. And the transition teacher has an assistant, too. Social worker, of course, principal. Of course,
yep.
Superintendent. That's me, part time, and that's really it. Most of the staffing really is the one-on-one custom individualized assistance to help make the young adult again more and more, increasingly, I should say, independent as they get older.
Sure, very cool. It's we're just scratching the surface, obviously, and we only have so much time. So I want to transition over now to the turkey trot, because we talked about CEA a little bit, trying to give you some understanding as to what it, CEA and what it's all about. But the turkey trot is your premier fundraiser, and it's actually, in my opinion, a model for any type of fundraiser that that any type of organization would want to have, because it's anticipated every year. I think you said it's 25 years now, right?
Absolutely, yeah, 25th
Incredible.
Anniversary.
Incredible. How did it all start?
It started in 93, and it was I had just joined CEA was instrumental in making sure that at least two people signed up for it. But at that time, in 93, my understanding from going back a few months before my tenure at CEA began, a couple of our board members thought, well, heck, let's do a run as a fundraiser. Because they were runners,
right.
And they thought, well, let's give it a go. And so essentially the event got the blessing of the CEO at the time, And they went out and organized a run. And the first year was, it's always been on Thanksgiving. It is not the first Turkey Trot. I think the original Turkey Trot, if you will, was in Buffalo or possibly Traverse City, Michigan, who've been running theirs for over 100 years. We're catching up, but it was the first one in New Jersey that I know of, or certainly the first one in this general region.
Right.
It started with 225 runners that Thanksgiving morning. It's since grown to around 6,000.
Incredible.
And is the largest event of its type in New Jersey, and certainly the largest event on Thanksgiving Day.
Incredible. Back in the 90s, running was not as accepted and involved as it is today. We have these runs all over the place. We just had a half marathon go through here on Sunday. So it's neat that you stepped on something, you found something that would work, and it obviously started to catch on. When did it start to turn into an event beyond all events, that it wasn't just a run anymore?
Well, we caught the beginning of this, what is called known as the second running boom in the United States. The first one was started around about 72 when Frank Shorter won the marathon in the Olympics.
Right.
And that went on for a while, and then in the early 80s it sort of started dying down a little bit in terms of popularity. And then in the early 90s, 5Ks and 10Ks became the thing to do, and we caught that edge. Just looking at the basic registrations, you ask when did something go out of control, or not out of control, it became the premier event. I'm going to go with 2007.
Okay.
That's when we approached we broke the 3,000 person barrier.
But then it started to become beyond a running event.
Exactly. It's a fun run.
Right. Well,
it's also a certified course for the United States Track and Field Association, and it's also a funny run in that I'd say about at least easily 10% of our participants come dressed in various costumes.
Yes.
And if you've been out there, you've seen people dressed as the Mayflower, as Native Americans, as the Grinch, of course, and anything you can imagine, and turkeys, of course.
Turkeys.
Anything and everything you can imagine about end-of-year holidays, people come dressed as or parodying, or sometimes even just being strange.
Right.
My favorite recollection was, I guess, around about 2012 when I watched a guy, I'm assuming a guy, dressed as a gorilla chasing someone else dressed as a banana for 3 miles. And that was brilliant. It really was.
Yes.
It brought out the fact that we're something to do that is fun, not something to do that could be considered a chore.
Sure.
And that sort of has evolved, as you mentioned. Plenty of events, and we are like sort of a standout that we could be copied. We are being copied. There's an awful lot of turkey trots in this region, western New Jersey, central New Jersey, that have come up since ours, and yet we still remain the largest, the best, and of course, with the greatest shirts.
Right. Which brings a lot of pressure on you, Gina. So you've just assumed some of the role of this. What is your vision of catching on, maintaining, and then improving?
I don't know that I would say it's a lot of pressure. I mean, so this is the 25th anniversary. We're talking about this doesn't happen overnight. So, I mean, it has really, it's been an accumulation of popularity. But, I mean, to continue in fashion, we're always looking for new sponsorships for the event. We have been doing a lot of publicity on social media. We contact a lot of running clubs in the area and outside of the area that we really try to capture as many people as we can that are in the area as well, that might not just be local, but visiting for the holiday as well.
Do you highlight any of the extremes, people that are coming from crazy distances?
Yeah, we've definitely had a few different countries participate in past trots. We also highlight our collaborations with other local businesses. And this year we've, caught the eye of the New York Jets. They are helping us say thank you to our volunteers and turkey trotters from past and present, and offering some discounted football tickets the Sunday after the trot. Just so happens that couple people that work for the Jets also participate in the Turkey Trot, and yeah, they love it. So
that's the beauty of networking right there.
Yeah.
So what are the opportunities that people would be interested in? You said there's sponsorships, so what type of sponsorships are you looking for, and what are the different opportunities?
Well, there are different levels of sponsorship. We have finish line sponsorships, award level sponsorships. Each varying level of sponsorship offers different opportunities for the business to really be out there for their business and to show their collaboration and support of CEA and all of our services. We have a lot of t-shirt sponsorships. I mean, a lot of people want to get their business on our Turkey Trot t-shirts because they are pretty spectacular. This year won't disappoint for sure.
There's a different...
Each year we have a different theme, and so being the 25th anniversary...
secret now, or is it you got...
The posters only just came out yesterday,
okay. All right.
And we can certainly share one with you.
Right.
I should point out we have an awful lot of sponsors, and again, as Gina mentions, getting on the shirt is pretty interestingly important. There's 6,500 shirts out there. People do collect them, and you see them all over the place, especially in long-sleeved weather, such as usually October through February, March, or whatever.
We're to the gym during winter.
Exactly. I mean, we'll see shirts, and therefore our sponsors on the back from years past and going into the future. There's a lot of opportunities there. I should certainly mention our main sponsor, our event sponsor, Joanna Foods, which is what a lot of people confuse this event as being run by. They've been our title sponsor since, I believe, the third, so that'd be 1995. They are a very solid supporter of CEA, not only financially through sponsorships, of our events, but certainly through the work they give us for our adult population to work on and gain a paycheck, gain a level of independence that comes with a paycheck and working experience, of course. And they've been solid behind us since Bob Pacina, who owns the company, took over in 95, and well before that when they were under a different name. So they are really integral to having our event become known.
Right.
And going back to something you mentioned earlier, when was a watershed-type event, I do need to point out a couple of quick other things. In 2012, right after Hurricane or Superstorm Sandy, we saw an amazing drop-off in what we would normally see as far as registrations, because it happened right about at the end of the month, going into November.
Sure.
And people's lives were heavily disrupted. And then in the week and a half before Thanksgiving, we wound up with another record, over 6,000 people. And I think that it kind of says something that people see this as something fun, something to do, something that took their minds perhaps off the destruction and all the problems that were associated with Sandy, loss of homes, loss of property, loss of power, the power being a small thing for many people, but yet the outpouring of people coming out to the streets of Flemington was absolutely amazing. I'd never seen anything like it until that time. And at that time, every year since, and every year previous, this event could not be run, not without the help, the cooperation, and the active participation of the Flemington Police Department, the Flemington Raritan EMS, who have three ambulances out, should we ever need them, and thankfully we have not. Certainly the Department of Public Works goes out of their way to help us out here in Flemington. Yep. The mayor, the borough council, I mean, everybody is amazingly supportive, because in some respects, this is Flemington's largest event.
Yeah,
and it puts the word Flemington on people's minds.
And that's something that's really important and near and dear to Flemington and Hunterdon County as we're...
One thing I want to add is it takes a lot of volunteers, not just the board members, but there's a lot of volunteers I've met over my time on the board, and there's a lot of high school students who do community service by helping out. There's a little expo the Saturday before people can pick up their material. If they don't want to pick it up the morning before when it's much more congested. And I've met senior citizens. There's a tremendous amount of volunteerism in the community for the Turkey Trot.
We got some sponsors here. We're going to have to cut away to just give them some recognition, and we'll be right back with folks from CEA. Listen to Good Morning Hunterdon on huntchamber.com.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
¿Sabía que de cada 5 personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
All right, welcome back to Good Morning Hunterdon. We're talking about CEA and the turkey trot. It's going to be happening on Thanksgiving. Oh, just about, what, 5 weeks away, right? It's piling on, and I'm sure you guys are really quite busy with getting it all done. We've been looking at some posters and talking about the T-shirts. There's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes to make this the successful event that it is. Let's quickly go through some of that, and yeah, you've been doing it for 25 years. How do you keep making it better? What are you looking at? What's your vision of improving upon it this year and in years going forward?
Well, first thing we need to do is increase the size of the town because we're almost at capacity. But trying to keep it original, certainly from the way it looks. You know, and that goes to the T-shirt. We're changing some of the things that people can associate with it. Last year we introduced finishers medals, which went over very well. So this year, the 25th anniversary finishers medal, which is kind of cool, it's got a number of different turkeys from years past on it, will grace the necks of our finishers. Oh, by the way, speaking of which, we've had 73,000 people register over the years, excluding this year, of course, for the event, and 51,000 runners have finished. And that equals approximately 7.5 times running around the world at 3.1 miles apiece. In case anyone's interested in weird stats, I got them for you. What else do we do?
You got some more time on your hands, I see.
Yeah, of course. Got nothing else to do, you know? But as Andy pointed out, there's an amazing need for volunteers, and in many respects, that helps drive attendance and interest, too. New people coming out to help, new people getting involved. New people who ran and then suddenly become volunteers and bring their families along to run with them after they volunteered. It's very much a community event.
What I love about it is not only is it a community event, not only is it doing it for 25 years, but you're doing this on a national holiday that many people in the past would rail at and say, I'm just staying home and I'm watching football and stuff like that. And I remember being in high school and having the challenge of simply being able to play a football game on Thanksgiving. That was hard enough. You've got all these volunteers, the police, the EMT, all helping you achieve this event on a fairly sacred holiday, meaning that people hold it near and dear to their heart. So that's over and above the achievement that you guys are accomplishing here. Very cool.
Well, one of the things associated really with that, and that kind of goes to a question you asked of Gina earlier, is where do people come from?
Right.
Well, Thanksgiving is obviously Thanksgiving. People are giving back to their community to some respect by running up an appetite. We're not in competition with the football games. They start a little bit later in the day.
Yep.
But, and I've heard anecdotally, of course, if someone's at home cooking the turkey or the dinner, get out of my way. Go run the turkey trot while I can do the work. And that is a common refrain. The students in the schools, one of the things that is always present at the turkey trot is the competition between teams, between some of our regional high schools, certainly Central and North and South, Voorhees, Del Valle. The existing students at those schools run as teams in many cases. Alumni from those schools and alumni from those particular track teams or cross-country teams or the swim teams come out and compete against each other post-school or against the people who are currently in school. So it's a larger community event with a lot of smaller community-style interactions. But really what brings people to it, in some respects, is the fact that it's Thanksgiving. People come home for Thanksgiving from all over the country, in some cases from different places around the world.
I didn't think
and they all come out on the streets of Flemington if they're in this general region.
Neat. Yeah, so you are capitalizing on everybody coming home to roost, so to speak.
Yeah,
Very cool.
Could I just mention one other thing?
No.
Which kind of ties into that. You notice I paid attention. The young man, Chris Panone, who has our course record, when he ran the event for several consecutive years and won it twice, he was going to school at the University of Colorado in Boulder and was an NCAA champion. And our women's course record holder, Julie Cully, when she ran it, and she's won it several times too, in 2012 she represented the United States in the 5K in the London Olympics.
Yep.
So we've had all sorts of...
had her on the show, as a matter of fact. Yeah. So yeah, we talked about her Olympic experience. How do people get involved? How do people volunteer, register? Where do they go to do all that?
People can go to our website, our lovely brand new website, CEA-NJ.org.
Mm-hmm.
We have Turkey Trot Central on our website, so they can sign up for the race. They can also sign up for volunteering. We have many different tasks that day, throughout the day, to make the race go as smoothly as possible. We have our Turkey Trot posters and postcards throughout, and businesses in the area. There is a really easy way to register. There's a QR code on the poster. You can just use your cell phone and scan that, and it'll take you right to the registration page as well.
And for those of you that that are somewhat old-fashioned and need to use a phone for calling somebody and speaking to a voice, we can certainly take your call at 908-782-1480. And if you don't get hold of somebody, leave a message, and we'll certainly get back to you, and we'll get you signed up.
Neat. So we got about a minute left. What's your vision for the future? What would you love to see happen 25 years from now on the 50th anniversary?
A huge flock of turkeys flying over the starting line.
Oh, my.
I just want to see that. I want to see about 8,000 or 10,000 people having a really, truly good time and going home and having a fantastic dinner and talking about what a good time they had that morning.
Neat.
At the CEA Joanna Foods Turkey Trot.
Neat, neat. Andy, what do you want to see as a board member?
Just that more people in the area of Central New Jersey are aware of all the mission we have of